My bad. I don't want to put a lot of pressure on you guys, but first service were pretty good listeners. And they were really talking smack about you guys. So, you know, I'm really excited to be here. I want to read a text from the book of Exodus this morning, chapter 10, on screen. Then the Lord said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand toward heaven so that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, a darkness that can be felt." So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was dense darkness in all the land of Egypt for 3 days. People could not see one another, and for 3 days they could not move from where they were, but all the Israelites had light where they lived. Then Pharaoh summoned Moses and said, "Go serve the Lord. Only your flocks and your herds shall remain behind. Even your little ones may go with you." But Moses said, "You must also let us have sacrifices and burnt offerings to sacrifice to the Lord our God. Our livestock also must go with us. Not a hoof shall be left behind, for we must choose some of them to serve the Lord our God, and we will not know what to use to serve the Lord until we arrive there." But the Lord hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he was unwilling to let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, "Get away from me. Take care that you do not see my face again. For on the day you see my face, you shall die." Moses said, "Just as you say, I will never see your face again." I'm excited to be here. For a couple of reasons, probably for lots of reasons, but two in particular I want to mention. The first is that I genuinely love Shane. Shane is my friend. He is my my partner in ministry. We've been through some training together. We're part of a preacher camp cohort together. Our paths have crossed in a lot of ways, and every time I'm with Shane, I'm touched and made better by his wisdom and his thoughtfulness and by how much he loves the family here. And I also know how thoughtful he is and how hard he's worked to build rapport, to build a good relationship with the community that he teaches among. And so for him to invite anyone in to stand in his spot for a few minutes is a real act of trust. And it's my great desire to not violate that trust today, to do my best. To honor that gift. Shane and I also share a really special bond in that we were a part of a group of seven preachers who decided to go on an all-day deep-sea fishing trip. There were seven of us who left that day. There were two of us who about 20 minutes in figured out this was a terrible idea and got seasick. Shane and myself, and so we spent the next 7.5 hours taking turns just leaning over the side of the boat and on what was literally maybe the most miserable day of my life. So it bonds you. I love Shane. I'll admit I have a second reason for being excited to be here. You mentioned my wife, Brooke. We've been married it'll be 24 years in December. Very early in our dating life, I don't even remember the circumstances, but she made it clear to me that her favorite preacher anywhere in the world was this guy named Mike from Abilene, Texas, Mike Cope. Some of you may have heard of him. That was great. I know Mike Cope. He's a good preacher. But of course, a few years later, we sort of discerned together that I might be called to preach. And I've been preaching for 15, 16, 17 years now in some capacity or another. And she is so sweet. She just makes it so clear all the time that I am definitely her second favorite preacher because Mike Cope is still her favorite. So my hope is that maybe if I preach in this place where Mike Cope has preached a lot, it'll narrow the gap a little bit for me with my wife. Because I love my wife, and I want to make her happy. In fact, recently, I did something really special for her. You're gonna be impressed by this. I bought her a really romantic gift. I bought her a new flashlight. You say, that sounds utilitarian, not necessarily romantic, but you don't know my wife. Hold on. You don't know this flashlight. This flashlight plugs directly into the wall. It's charging at all times, and if the power to that outlet goes off, the flashlight immediately turns on. So that if it goes dark in the house, you know how to find your flashlight. You see the romance, right, in that? Okay, let me tell you a little more of the story. I noticed several years into our marriage that every time I went into Home Depot, I found myself wandering past the flashlight section thinking, I gotta buy a new flashlight. Having a good flashlight is an important thing in a house. I firmly believe that, right? You never know when you're gonna need a good flashlight, but it felt like every time I went to where I kept my flashlight, I couldn't find my flashlight. Every 3, 4, 5, 6 months, it was gone, and I'd have to go get a new flashlight. And I was kind of embarrassed about it because it made me feel like I was being irresponsible, like I was losing the flashlights. It was kind of a mystery until, 7, maybe 8 years into our marriage, my wife asked me to go get something out of our bedroom for her. She said, it's in the cabinet in the dresser right next to my bed. She has this sort of wardrobe, big dresser thing that's set right next to her side of the bed. So I opened the cabinet door, and there right in the front of that cabinet was my brand new flashlight that I had just purchased at Home Depot. I know it's strange, but I'm glad I found this. I won't lose this one. I'm going to put it back where it goes. But as I grabbed it and went to look for what it was she sent me to get in the first place, I immediately saw another one of my flashlights in this cabinet. And then another one. And then another one. This is 100% true. This is not a preacher story. By the time I went through that cabinet and the attached drawers of that dresser, 9 flashlights. I immediately begin to rethink a lot of my life choices, right? Like, what have I gotten myself into marrying this woman? When I confronted her about it and I asked her what was going on with it, she didn't believe me. She seemed genuinely surprised. I showed her the pictorial evidence because I took a picture with my phone. I know who I'm married to, at least I thought I did. And she said, I don't know how that happened. Later that day, she came back to me and she said, okay, I do know how that happened. See, every time I pass by one of your flashlights, I often find myself overwhelmed by this fear that a night would come where the lights would go out, where the power would go out in our neighborhood, and we'd be stuck in the dark. And then what if there was a fire or a strange noise in the house? What if someone broke in? We had a child at this point. What if our daughter was sick or crying or upset? And we couldn't get to her because we couldn't see where to go. And I guess every time I would think, oh, I'll just put that flashlight right by my bed so I'll have light if the lights go out, if it gets too dark. And then I forgot that I'd done it, and the next time I would do it again. 9 times. we all know what it's like to be afraid of the dark in one way or another. Not like that, clearly. But I don't know how well my wife would have done in ancient Egypt in the time of the plagues, right? A darkness so dark you could feel it, could be felt. I don't know that any of us would do well in that darkness. It's important to kind of remember the context here, right? This text finds us near the end of a great, very one-sided contest between two powers. On the one hand, Pharaoh, ruler, emperor of Egypt, the greatest kingdom in the world at the time. And on the other hand, God, Yahweh, the God of the Israelites. You'll remember that when Moses first goes into Pharaoh's presence on behalf of God and asks for the people to be let go, Pharaoh responds in this way: who is the Lord that I should heed him and let Israel go? I do not know the Lord, and I will not let Israel go. When you read the Lord there, that's God's divine name there, right? Yahweh. Pharaoh is saying, listen, I know about a lot of gods, but I don't know this God. It doesn't ring any bells. It doesn't feel like someone I need to listen to. So why would I let the Israelites go? I'm not going to listen. God's response to that statement from Pharaoh is heard in chapter 6 and then seen in the remaining chapters. God says to Moses in Exodus 6:1. Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. Can I take a little preacher's license and transliterate that a little bit? Oh, you haven't heard of me? Let me introduce myself. Let me tell you who I am, Pharaoh. In fact, let me give you 10 specific examples of who I am and why you should listen to me. God begins to undo Egypt. Pharaoh will sometimes say, oh, okay, you can go ahead and go, but then change his mind. Or sometimes Pharaoh will say, oh, you can go, but you can't take the children with you because I want to make sure you come back. In our text, he says, well, you can go, but you got to leave all your livestock. You can't take the animals with you. Over and over again, Pharaoh tries to negotiate with God, but he's in a contest with someone that he has no power to negotiate with and no power to contend with. Now, I'm not telling you that God is being petty here or God is trying to be a bully. But God has plans for the people of Israel. God's going to lead them out of Egypt and then turn them into a people, a nation, his nation. But it's not just that. God has plans for Egypt and all the other nations eventually too. Through the Israelites, God's going to bring blessing to everybody. But it starts here. And in order to receive that blessing, he needs the Israelites to be willing to follow him out of Egypt. In fact, he wouldn't mind if the Egyptians remember his name for a long time to come, so that when he comes back for the next leg of the journey, that they'll say, yeah, we remember the stories of that God, Yahweh. Pharaoh wants to prove that he's the biggest, baddest guy on the planet. And God entertains his silliness with this little contest. One of the primary responsibilities of Pharaoh in the ancient world was to be the maintainer, the arbiter of this concept called Maat. In English, it would look like M-A-A-T. Best way to translate that would be order. The ancient Egyptians didn't think so much in terms of good and evil. They thought more of order and chaos. And Pharaoh was the one who kind of had this demigod status and could sort of maintain a relationship with the gods in a way that kept order within the boundaries of Egypt. It was chaos everywhere else. Everywhere else, the rivers flooded. In Egypt, though, the Nile just flowed predictably and reliably and stayed within the borders of its shore. Everywhere else, there were roving bands of marauders and little nations warring all the time. In Egypt, there was one power who oversaw everything. In Egypt, they had security and safety and wealth. And Pharaoh is the one who made sure that happens. How? By keeping the chaos out, by maintaining order. But if you'll remember, God is actually the one who brought order to chaos. Think back to Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, there's nothing. Well, but there's something, right? There's this sort of chaotic sea, this darkness, this depth. And what you get kind of is the image of this sort of like primordial chaotic ooze. And it's all darkness. And the first word that God speaks is, let there be light. And there is. Sun and the moon don't show up for a few more days, not till day 4, right? But in this story, God says light, and the chaotic darkness is pushed away. God begins to bring order, day and night, time, and then land, and then the separation between the skies and the sea, right? I mean, God begins to sort of take the nothing, the chaos that's out there, and form it into something that has order. Pharaoh doesn't provide order, God does. And just to prove it, God begins to unleash disorder, chaos in Egypt. I think we're meant to think of Genesis when we read the stories of the plagues. God is, in essence, uncreating. So just as he speaks light into existence with a word, by his simple command, he extinguishes the light in Egypt. Moses, hold your hand up. It's dark. And there is nothing that Pharaoh, in all his power and all his arrogance and all his pride, can do about it. God is sovereign. God is the one who turns the light off and on, not Pharaoh. In Egypt, they find themselves stuck in a darkness that is so deep it can be felt. I wonder what comes to mind when I say that phrase. What comes to mind for you? I asked some friends, some coworkers, this over the last couple of weeks. When I say a darkness that can be felt, what comes to mind? One person said, it reminds me of going on a cave tour. And that moment somewhere where they turn all the lights off. And no matter what you do, you wave your hand in front of your face, you don't see it. There's just no light. There's no way to see. Yeah, that sounds pretty dark. Another coworker said, it reminds me of a time that I was a teenager and some of us snuck into this building in town that everyone said was haunted. And we went in there for a goof. We were just having fun. But you know, we got in the basement and it really did get so dark and there were these weird noises. And suddenly, it was like I started to see some things there that I just know weren't there. Like I kind of convinced myself in the darkness that maybe this place is haunted. So sometimes in the darkness, we can see things that aren't there. We can find ourselves afraid of things that we weren't in the light. Another person I talked to said, makes me think of like a person. Well, I said, I'm not sure what you mean. Do you mean like a person who's like just feels like they've got a lot of, like a cloud hanging over them, a lot of darkness in their life, or someone who's maybe got bad intentions or some evil feels like it's around them? She said, yeah, but I'm thinking of a specific person in my life right now. I'm not her pastor, but boy, sure made me want to pray for him, that her pastor would have some time with her soon to talk about what that person is doing in her life. I wonder what it would be for you. My guess is all of us know what it's like to stand in that kind of darkness at some point. A darkness that feels so deep it can be felt. It may not be a matter of the absence of light, but a darkness that comes at us another way. Maybe for some of you it would be like me, that the darkness is actually just this voice that speaks up at times that says, you know, you're really not worth very much. You're kind of a fraud. You're not very good at anything you try and do. People are going to figure you out eventually. Maybe it's that kind of self-doubt, that kind of negative self-image. Or maybe it's an illness. Maybe it's a diagnosis you've received recently. Or maybe it's the grieving and the loss you feel over someone else who's dealing with sickness or who's lost their battle with a disease. For some of us, there are things that could be the darkness that we don't have a lot of personal experience with, right? But there are a lot of places in the world where things like war and famine where evil is running rampant in ways that are changing every single day for them. It's a darkness that they can feel. There's a darkness that can be felt in Egypt, but it's every place in the whole empire except this one little place called Goshen. There's light in Goshen. Because in Goshen, well, that's where the Israelites live. The people that God is there to deliver, the people that God is there to, they get light in this moment. It's their God who has the power to turn the light on and turn the light off. It's their God, not Pharaoh, who has the power to give life. It's their God who has the power to hold back chaos. It's their God who has the power to bring order. And so when it is dark everywhere and no one can move and no one can see one another and it's basically like everything has come undone, in Goshen they have light because it's their God who controls the light. Here's a part of the gospel for you this morning. The God of those people in Goshen is the same God that we've been singing praise to and praying to this morning.
That's right.
One more time. The God of the people in Goshen is the same God that you and I have been praying to and praising this morning. I don't know if you guys are aware of this. There hasn't been a lot of talk about it, but there's an election this week. And I want to say, elections matter. I get it. And we have strong feelings about elections and candidates and parties and policies. And I don't think there's anything wrong with having an interest in that. And that's why this morning I want to encourage you to vote. No, I'm just kidding. So this is a joke. Not a good one, but a joke. Here's what I want to encourage you to do. Think back from the one or two political ads you might have seen recently, or 2000. You know what it feels like to me? They spend a whole lot less time talking about what it is they can do than what bad things it is that will happen if you elect the other person. Both sides, every party, every candidate. Listen, if you don't put me in charge, it's going to get real dark around here. Things are going to get real bad. The country's going to fall apart. The economy's going to be in the tank. Listen, some politicians can make decisions that make differences like that, but it sounds an awful lot like, if you don't put me back on that throne, and chaos breaks out because I'm the only one who can keep order. I'll tell you, it sounds a lot like Pharaoh to me. You know that Pharaoh is just a title, right? Like, it's not Mr. Pharaoh in the story. Pharaoh just means king or emperor. And there's a reason I think this Pharaoh doesn't get named, because all of the Pharaohs are kind of the same. Everybody who seeks after power and takes on responsibilities for things they know they can't control just in pursuit of power, I mean, they all kind of have the same program, right? And I'm not saying all the candidates are the same in our elections. I'm not making a complete connection there. But I mean, they're a little bit kind of all the same. And here's the most important part to know about this. There are good and bad choices to make, but I promise you this. There is nobody that we can elect or not elect who can turn the lights off or turn the light on. That is only the king on the throne in heaven that can do that. But by his word, the light came into being. By his word, the light can be turned out. But nobody else has the power to do that to us. Nobody can be so incompetent as to make the whole world fall apart. Nobody can be so gifted as to make us not need the God who's on that throne. There is nobody that we can vote for that can undo what God is intending to do. And Pharaoh had lots of power, and he couldn't do a thing about it. He just had to sit in the dark and wait for God to turn the lights back on. Somebody in first service would have amended that probably, but I don't know. I don't want to put a lot of pressure on you. But do you hear what I'm saying? Let's move out of politics. In your own life, in your own families, in your own workplace, there are choices we make every day that can make a difference. What we do matters. But none of you has the power to make it work or to break it down. If God wills it, it will be. I want you to think about this. God is not willing to compromise on this. Okay, you can go, but you can't take the kids. Okay, you can go, but you can't take the animals. No. God is going to do it one way. No. We're all going. They're taking everybody, and they're not coming back because I'm building something here. And I'm not willing to compromise, and you don't have the power to change that. I want you to know that in this world today, the same thing holds true, and the God who has that kind of power is the God we're here worshiping. Right. He is for us. He loves us. Sometimes we can disappoint him a little bit. I'm not saying that's not true, but he is on our team. I really think for my wife, it's not so much the darkness that scared her. It's the capacity she had to imagine what could be waiting for her in the dark. You hear what I'm saying? She's walked through the hallways of our house countless thousands of times. She could put a blindfold on with the lights on and walk from the front door to the back door as many times as she needed to. But there's something about being in the darkness that makes her think
Boy, what other dangers could be waiting for me that I couldn't see? In the darkness, we lose the illusion that we have some control, right? In the darkness, it becomes clear, boy, we really don't know what's going on. In the light, we can fool ourselves, but in the darkness, it becomes a little clearer. And it becomes a little scary to think of what might be waiting for us. And I think the world loves to capitalize on that capacity in us. I think the competing powers in the world, and I say competing with air quotes, because God doesn't have any competition, but the powers of this world love to manipulate our capacity for imagining bad scenarios. They do. And I want you to hear me say, the God who is in control of the light is our God, and he has a plan, and he's going to see it through, and there's no compromise coming in that. That is the gospel for us. But I want you to take a challenge from this too. I don't think God leaves the light on in Goshen just because that's where his people live. See, there are some of the plagues where the Israelites are subjected to them as well, right? There are some of the plagues that when something goes wrong in Egypt, it goes wrong for the Israelites too. But in this particular one, they're exempt for some reason. Now, I know God loves to pour out blessing. I believe that. And I don't understand the mechanics in the world as it is today of why it is God pours out blessing when he does and why he allows the darkness to exist at times when he does. I believe there's a world coming where we won't have to worry about the darkness anymore, but I know we don't live in it yet. Man, come Lord Jesus, let's get there. But for now, I don't necessarily understand the mechanics of it, but I know God is constantly trying to bring light into the world. And I think maybe the image we should take from the light being on in Goshen is that we are the means by which God is trying to take light into the dark places. Right? Because if it's dark everywhere, including Goshen, it's possible at some point for Pharaoh or the other Egyptians to go, well, it just must have been some kind of natural phenomenon that we can't understand. It happened everywhere. Who knows? Maybe one of our gods got mad and this was punishment that we'll have to figure out what it's about. But when the lights go out everywhere, but in this little bitty place where those enslaved folks from nowhere live, and it's their God who says, no, I have my finger on the light switch, it gets pretty hard to ignore the reality. And so here's what I want to invite you to do this week, in what will be a challenging week for our world, but every day in what is a challenging world to live in. See the invitation to be the light that God sends out into the world. See the invitation to be the reminder of, this is my name, and this is what I can do, and this is how the story is going to end, and there's no way to change that part of it. Walk into the dark places and be the light. And let me be clear about this. I am not telling you to go out and try and extinguish the darkness by yourself. That is not our job. That's God's business. It's our business to go into the dark places and to remind the people who are stuck there that there is still light. Amen. And that it is found in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and of Jesus Christ. Go and be that light. I'm out of time, so I'm gonna do this quickly. Everybody got one of these? Everybody remember this? You had to know this was coming, right? This is it. I'm not going to sing, but this is your invitation right here. Do we still do those sometimes? This is it. Go be this. Go let it is not enough to live in the light. You got to take the light to the dark places. Because there are people there that God is wanting to redeem. God was delivering Israel so that he could one day deliver all the nations. And we're in that moment. We're in that phase. Go be a part of that. My prayer for you this week is that you've been filled with joy and hope in knowing that you serve the God who has the power and the authority over everything, but also that you would be moved to go and be light in the dark places in the world, that you would be the reminder of the hope and the love power of the God we serve. Thank you for your time this morning.